Game on.
Game on.
2FM.
And you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock tonight. Nothing much to talk about after the weekend, really. I think we might actually struggle to fill the air between now and 8 o'clock. We have Michael Duigdon and John McIntyre on the latest managerial troubles for Galway Hurling. Donal Lenihan and Shane Horgan on Ireland's win against Italy yesterday. And Eamon Dunphy on a pretty crazy few days, I think it's fair to say, in the English Premier League. 51552 is our text number at Game On 2FM on Twitter. And feel free to get in touch between now and the end of the show. Alan Colley with me as he is every Monday night. How are you, sir?
I'm great form, Hugh.
Yeah. Do you back Golden Horn? I bet you didn't.
No.
Yeah, I knew that.
Trev.
You back Trev?
Yeah.
At 5-4.
I'm a favourites man.
Really? You're a ladies man, I think.
Well.
And she stood out there and called you.
Yeah, Golden Horn. Because we've seen Golden Horn in Leopardstown only a couple of weeks ago. And yeah.
Didn't really convince, did he? No.
You never, after looking at that performance, obviously he's brilliant horse and all he's done all year, but after looking at that, you never would have thought he's going to go win the Ark in 2 or 3 weeks.
Did you see Frankie Dettori in the weigh room afterwards?
I didn't see any of it, no.
Getting shot with champagne by all the lads, and he went mental.
I heard that. He's had some year, Frankie.
Lost the plot completely. I know, he's had a brilliant year, and considering where he's come from, I mean, that man was in big trouble. His career was on the rocks. And all the allegations and all the stuff that was going on, and in fairness to him, he's come right back.
But
brilliant,
he was
summer.
Unreal. The talent and everything, that was never in doubt.
Yeah.
Or never in question. It was just kind of whatever was going on in his head or off the course.
Mm.
But to come back and win everything that he's done, unbelievable.
Yeah, fair play to him. Golden Horn, John Gosling as well. Big week ahead for the Republic of Ireland.
Massive week, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. It's been some weekend with all the sport that's going on. As you said there, Hugh, crazy few days in the football world. And obviously this week, then the massive game now with kind of Ireland, and us all looking forward to the Germany and Poland game. I'm not too optimistic. I don't want to put a dampener on the week only starting off, but the injuries and everything, like, I'm worried about Coleman. You need your best players, especially going into the big games, to not have Coleman to be a major loss.
Well, he's not definitely gone yet.
No.
It doesn't look good, I have to say, but he's not definitely gone. But I'm not worried, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Poland are going to whoop Scotland on Thursday night.
Okay, well, that'll leave us then with obviously a free game on Sunday.
Mm.
And... but I still don't fancy us to beat Poland. I think I would take a playoff right now.
Yeah.
And I would have taken the playoff at the start of the competition.
Sure.
Of the group stages. And I'm sure Martin O'Neill is sitting in the hotel tonight thinking, I'm delighted to be in the position we are with two games to go.
Yeah.
Because it was looking fairly bleak. Because the campaign has been poor, let's be honest. As we've said numerous times, it's been ordinary enough. And Ireland have been ordinary. And obviously with Scotland slipping up and Georgia's let us back in. But I would gladly take a playoff right now.
Did you watch the rugby yesterday?
Bits of it.
What do you think?
Well, by what I'm hearing and listening to, it was fairly average stuff as well. But look, they're in the quarterfinals. What more can they do, Hugh? You know, look at the positive side of it as well.
Okay, we're a glass half full on this show tonight. Let's see what our analysts and pundits make of that. As I said, we're going to talk to Donal and Shane Horgan a little bit later on and get their views. And what happened to England on Saturday?
Well, I watched
I'll tell you exactly what happened.
Dead man walking.
Dead man walking, Stuart Lancaster.
You could do a Foley. Surely.
4-11. To stay on in the job, sorry, to lose his job, and 2-1 to stay on as England head coach. And I was watching Andy Farrell today being interviewed by the press, and a couple of very interesting questions about his role in the team. I don't know if you saw the story with Billy Vunipola and Kieran Bracken and this Q&A session that he did over the last couple of days, and he basically said that Andy Farrell had too much influence on the England squad. And I had to wonder why anybody would drop George Ford playing so well for Owen Farrell, who's really quite a limited out half, as he showed against Wales and he showed against Australia. It didn't make any sense to me at all.
I know you're very strong on this. You're mad for Ford over Farrell any day. And we had this debate and discussion with a few lads. We were watching the rugby yesterday. And I was of the same opinion as you, Hugh, in the sense that the fodder must have had a major input.
He had to have.
Of course.
Like, he had to have.
100% he must have had a major input if he's here. Because he's basically... would he be Lancaster's right hand man?
Oh yeah,
more or less.
Absolutely.
With the backs other lad, coach. What's the other lad that sits?
Backs
the other
coach,
side?
Basically. And you know, Andy Farrell's job is backs coach, and like, you know, with his son in the squad. I mean, I don't care what anyone says. That has to have influenced his decision.
It does. I
hate
to see.
It just has to.
Yeah, I hate to see when fathers and sons and stuff like that are involved. It's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. A couple of texts in already to start us off before we get our weekend montage in. Graham in Cork says, cannot fathom how the owners of LFC Liverpool backed Rodgers in the summer when it was obvious the players had lost faith in him, along with an ill-advised transfer committee and the policy to sell the top players. Fenway Sports Group have a lot to answer for. Cannot see them changing their philosophy regardless of who comes in.
I have a lot of sympathy for Rodgers, Hugh, and I'm sure we'll get to that later on.
Same old story with England. They always fall flat in all sports, cricket, rugby and soccer, when they think they're going to win it, says Joe in Cork. That's
actually a good point, Hugh, in a sense. Imagine the hype and pressure on them, though.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that played a major part in the game the other night. There was so much pressure on them going into that. Australia had a free game, basically, going into it.
There was pressure on them, but Australia were so much better than England. I mean, just a complete mismatch. And I tell you what, people laughed at me, Adam, when I said last year Australia win the World Cup. Laughed at me.
I was thinking it the other night because I had a few shekels on Australia just in that match.
Where are those laughers now?
They look good for
it. Long way to go, though.
What, 7-1?
They're still 7-1.
They were at the start,
just over 7-1.
Of the teams I've seen so far, and they were the most impressive. Yeah. That lad, Foley, unbelievable.
Yeah.
The number 10.
Bernard Foley, yeah.
Bernard Foley. Surely he went to school somewhere here in Ireland.
Yeah, you think so. A lot of Australian descendants, I'd say, part of the country.
His father played for Leinster, is that true?
Bernard Foley's father played for Leinster. I didn't know that.
I heard that yesterday. Yeah.
We'll check that out. Okay, if you missed anything from the weekend, it was a brilliant weekend of sport, regardless of who you support or what you like. The drama, here it is. We got you covered.
Murray has it, sweeps it out to Sexton, lets it up now for one away towards Keith Earls. Keith Earls with the try.
I think it was what we expected, but it's not what we wanted. Hopefully it does stand to us later on, because there was a fair bit of graft required to get the result. Inevitably, sometimes in knockout rugby, ugly arm wrestles can get you over the line, and that was an ugly arm wrestle.
Through to Ozil, might have been offside, given onside. Ozil's cross, it's deflected in, and Sanchez was in there. Well caught away into the penalty area on the left-hand side, could be two here. It's laid back across, Ozil scores, it is two. Sanchez, who clips his way through and shoots it. Oh, he's done it again, and it's a third goal for Arsenal. We've not played 20 minutes.
Sometimes you have that magic side in our game, and then you have a great result.
I want to let it clear. One, I don't run away. Two, if the club wants to sack me, they have to sack me.
I will be here as long as I'm asked to be here. I think, as I said, I can really help the club in terms of what it is they're trying to do. And until they tell me otherwise, I'll give everything to make the football club better. And when the time comes for me not to be here, I'll accept that. I hope to be here for a bit longer here.
And Morrissey coming in, and it's a goal! And Cork City make the breakthrough!
Thrilled to get to the final. First time we've been in the Aviva, and our first final for 8 years.
I really believed in the horse so much. I was going so fast that not even a rocket would have passed. Unbelievable. I was flying the last 3 hours. I thought, no, it's not possible for a horse to pass.
Yeah, that's the voice of Frankie Dettori finishing that one off. Not even a rocket would get past Golden Horn, he said. He was obviously fairly confident, but a very exciting weekend of sport. Right, we're going to talk Gaelic games now, because after the problems between the Mayo footballers and the management team of Noel Kennelly and Pat Holmes, it seems like Galway hurling is going through problems of its own this week. I'm excited to be joined by Michael Doignan and John McIntyre to talk about this. You're both very welcome, lads.
Thank you.
Michael, listen, if I can start with you. What do you make of what's after happening in Anthony Cunningham's position after what the players did, the vote of no confidence, and him now insisting that he wants to stay on for this season? What do you make of everything that's after happening?
Yeah, look, I was very surprised, you know, when it emerged over the last few days. You know, I would have thought Galway coming out of the All-Ireland final would have said, look, we were four up at half time, we didn't play in the second half. We'll go back, we'll have a look at what went wrong, and we'll kick on and see can we come back stronger next year. You know, that would normally be what you'd expect. You know, I know the previous year he was under pressure to hold on to the position, and he fought very hard to do so. And I would have thought there was no doubt after the year they had, because nobody gave them much of a chance at the start of the year. And they had a great year. A lot of young players came through, the Mannions and Jason Flynn, John Hanbury, lads like that developed a lot during the year. And I thought there was a huge difference in Galway's play this year and development in a lot of their players. So I didn't see it coming. And look, I suppose you have to say players train very hard and they're entitled to, you know, have a say in their management and how things are going. And obviously you'd have at the end of the year, you'd have a review of what went on. But I would have thought that would have been a very positive review, you know, generally. But obviously taking into account a very disappointing second half. And where did it go wrong then? You'd say the players didn't play in the second half of the All-Ireland final. You could also say there was a few mistakes along the way. I thought against Tipperary, if Galway had lost, Anthony Cunningham would have been in big trouble because of leaving Pádraig Mannion for so long on Seamus Callan and letting him score 3 goals. Mm. I thought Aidan Hart was taken off in the final after 20 minutes for what? I don't know. And I think that might have caused a fair bit of you know, controversy among some of the players as well, things like that. So they had to be answered. I think the players are entitled to, you know, ask questions about what went on during the year. But, you know, and then they go along, have a meeting with Anthony Cunningham, and then within 48 hours he's appointed, when maybe there should have been a period where they sat down and discussed these things and worked through them. So, look, I think there's wrong on both sides here, and I don't know how Anthony Cunningham can stay on after this has happened, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm gonna get, I want to come back to that in just a second. I mean, John, just to pick up on an earlier point that Michael made, it does seem to be that there's a split here on who is in the right here, whether the players were justified in following this course of action, or actually were they out of line in what they've done. What's your own view?
Well, I wouldn't disagree with anything that Michael has said there, definitely. I was away last week, and when the story broke, I was surprised. I wasn't really aware. I had heard of rumblings from the camp during the course of the season, and there was nearly a heave against Cunningham by the players after they suffered a heavy 10-point loss to Waterford in the league quarter-final in the spring. And they basically confronted Cunningham, and I think there was a change in atmosphere over the following couple of weeks for the better. And, you know, Galway went on and had a very productive championship, albeit only after Aidan Hart salvaged a draw for them against Dublin in Croke Park in the first round of the Leinster Championship. But they grew in stature as the year progressed, notwithstanding the fact that they lost to Kilkenny in the Leinster final by 7 points. But they weren't in disgrace or anything like that. They were very competitive. Then edged out Tipperary in a thriller, having walloped Cork in the All-Ireland quarter-final. And they were leading by 3 points at half-time in Kilkenny. Before the All-Ireland final, Hugh, I thought, you know, Kilkenny would retain the title at half-time. I was giving Galway a great chance. And, you know, from the outside looking in, you'd be saying, God, that was a progressive championship season for Galway. Cunningham has led Galway to 2 All-Ireland finals in 4 years. In 2012, he took the Cats to a replay, came desperately close to winning that All-Ireland title. And in that season's Leinster final, I think Galway produced the best 20 minutes of hurling I've ever seen from a Galway hurling team when they destroyed Kilkenny. And against that background, it's a surprise, this development. But my information this evening is that the players won't be backing away. They've made their bed and they're going to follow it through. And to be honest, if the board ultimately decide to back their man, and Anthony is agreeable to continue to continue in that position, I can see a scenario something akin to what Gerald McCarthy endured in Cork and Justin McCarthy endured in Limerick, where they toughed it out, but unfortunately the team's fortunes took an awful slump. So this is going to be a big call.
Michael, I have to say, it seems bizarre to me, and you know, you can argue the toss about, you know, whether or not the players are right about this, and there's equally strong points on both sides. It seems bizarre to me that Anthony Cunningham would want to stay on with a dressing room that doesn't want him in charge.
Well, I don't think he can stay on. And, you know, just on the human side, Anthony Cunningham, captain Galway through the minor and under 21 All-Ireland. He won 2 All-Ireland seniors. He played with them for a long time. He's come back. He's given 4 years of his life as manager. And then to be told by the players that they don't want you for whatever reason. I don't know. John doesn't know what's going on within the dressing room, what their training was like, what was happening. But it can't have been too bad when they got to an Ireland final and played as well as they did in the first half. There wasn't much wrong at half-time in the final. And now the players have decided, for whatever reason, that they want him out. But that is very, very difficult. And, you know, he's a proud man. Cunningham is a fair competitor now. And, you know, I don't know him particularly well, but you can see him, his demeanour on the sideline. He's up for the fight when it's Cody or whoever it is. And he must be very, very hurt by this. And that's on the human side. But there's no way you can continue if the players don't want you. And, you know, I think the Galway players need to look a lot deeper than this. You know, like, Galway haven't won that Ireland for, you know, as we all know, since 1988. And there seems to be one excuse after the other. Somebody's fault all the time. Like, when are they going to stand up and say, look, we have to take responsibility for this? As a player myself, I've taken an awful lot of different managers. I think I had 10 different managers in my time. Some of them were great. Some of them were...
John, you even played under me.
I did, John. I didn't. Just for 1 year. And look, you could take that. I'm sure, John, you were a young manager starting out that time. Yeah. And you got 1 year in Offaly. And you were still playing, I think.
I was, at that stage.
You were, yeah. And, like, you got 1 year. But whatever reason, you didn't stay on for the second year. But the players had no input into that. I know Ossie had this reputation of players managing the thing and all that sort of thing, but that was never the case. But what I would have always said is, you learn from your managers, you learn something from every manager. You know, some you'd agree with more than others, some you'd agree with their tactics more than others, but you learn. But when you went out onto that field, it was up to you to win your position, win your own ball. Some days you played well, some days you didn't. But I never can remember once in my life turning around and losing a match and saying that was the manager's fault.
Yeah, I mean, is this, John, is this as simple as saying that, you know, if the players had won that second half and if they emerged from the final as All-Ireland champions, that everything would be rosy in the garden? I mean, I find that pretty hard to believe.
But the bottom line is, the results-driven business. And if you win an All-Ireland title, especially in a county in Galway, which has been, you know, craving for one since 1988, none of that matters. None of that matters. Like Brian Cody, for instance, I would say he's a tough man in a dressing room. And at the end of the day, the players will do anything if they achieve ultimate glory. And they don't mind about being, you know, told in uncertain terms what they have to do, if they have to book up, if they have to improve their performance, improve their off lifestyle, improve their off-field discipline. You know, if you're winning All-Ireland titles, it doesn't matter what the manager is doing, how he is behaving, what his principles are, what his priorities are. If he's delivering an All-Ireland medal to you, you'll put up with anything. But the difficulty for Galway, I suppose, this group of Galway players, now that they've made this move, they can't back down, because it would be worse than if they had never made the move in the first place, because they would be perceived as lacking the bottle and the balls to go through with what they with their rebellion or the revolution, whatever way else you want to call it. Now, as a former manager of Galway and somebody who knows Anthony Cunningham, I would have huge sympathy for him tonight. I think, you know, he's after taking them to two All-Ireland finals. He's come as close as any manager since Cyril Farrell to delivering the McCarthy Cup west of the Shannon. But Michael is right. He has obviously lost the dressing room. And if he wants to tough it out, and if he has the support of the GAO officials locally, you know, somebody's going to have to come in here and say, what is in the best interest of Galway Hurling? And if Anthony Cunningham ultimately continues with the support of the board but doesn't have the support of the dressing room, and obviously some players mightn't want to continue wearing the Galway jersey if that scenario unfolds, it would create a situation where Galway reaching the All-Ireland final this year, there's been no follow-through. If anything, it's gone haywire. And a huge amount at stake. And, you know, there's an information vacuum down here this evening. I tried to contact a number of board officials today. The players are very united, saying little or nothing, even privately. And, you know, they've made a stand, and I just don't see them backing down on this.
John, we're going to call you back in a better line. Just stay with us, if you don't mind. But Michael, you know, I read Gerry Lochnan's piece today, and you know, he has suggested that player power, and it's a group of senior players that he had to deal with in his time, were pretty much responsible for his departure when he left the Galway job, and that perhaps those same players could be responsible this time round. Do you get the sense that there is a core group of guys that are just leading the others in the drive against Anthony Cunningham here, and that actually it's those guys that have the biggest gripe with the boss?
Well, I don't know, to be totally honest with you, but that's what I find strange is this. In 2012, when Galway nearly won the All-Ireland, they were beaten in a replay. After that replay, and they got a hammering from Kilkenny, I said to myself, Galway are in a worse position now than they were before the year started, because they were absolutely hammered. They were destroyed in so many key positions throughout the field. Then Anthony Cunningham had to go away and rebuild the team. And he tried to do that. And over the following couple of years, it didn't happen for him. So I would have thought at the end of 14, when his term was up, maybe that was the time that he should have went. But he survived. And then last year, he obviously realised himself, look, what I've had here is not working. So he went out and he brought in these lads, like I mentioned earlier, like Hanbury, the Mannions, Jason Flynn, Conor Whelan came in out of the blue for the quarterfinal of the championship. All these players came in this year. And all of a sudden, there was a completely different look about the Galway team. With a hammer Cork below in Turles, the beat Tipperary, tremendous performance. If Seamus Callanan wasn't playing that, they would have beaten Tip well. And, you know, and they played some great hurling. So I can't understand where this discontent is coming from. Like, what is he doing wrong? Some of the Galway players could come on now and say to me, or say, we're not happy about this, that, or the other. To me, it doesn't make any sense after the year they've had. So, you know, it might be time for Galway, for Anthony Cunningham and the Galway County Board to say, no, we're not backing down either. We're staying, and whoever wants to play for Galway will play for Galway. Anyone that doesn't want to play for Galway, let them go away. And you know what? That's not a bad thing, because I wouldn't like to be put in that position. I go and put your head like that. The thing in Mayo, as well, you know, that was a bit different in terms of what happened with the appointment of the management team last year. There was cloud around that. But I don't think that Anthony Cunningham and his management team deserve this after rebuilding a team, you know, playing so well in the Ireland final. And at the end of the day, he wasn't out in the field in the second half of the final. The players just didn't produce it. And, you know, I got a feeling after that game that the Galway players felt at halftime they had one hand on the cup, they were going up the steps, and they forgot to hurl in the second half. Now, if I was a player, I'd be going back, particularly if I was a senior player, and I'd be saying, lads, we let that slip. We had them on the ropes. You know, we were playing brilliant hurling in the first half, and we can come back next year and we can do this with the whole same bunch of us. So I don't know where it's coming from. As I say, it's going to be very difficult. You know, in the normal run of events now, Anthony Cunningham will have to go because he can't operate. But maybe there is a group of players, younger players there that aren't happy with us. We don't know. We're not privy to what's going on. But you'd imagine a lot of younger players that got their chance under Anthony Cunningham would be loyal to Anthony Cunningham. He's the man who starts in the Inter-County Hurling, and you'd imagine there's a loyalty there. And if there's not, maybe that says something about the personality of those players.
John, there is a dangerous precedent. You know, if you look at the Mayo situation, and now you take Galway as well, of players who feel they should have done better than they did, for whatever reasons that is, and have made this move to kind of wrestle power away from the management. And there's an increasing view, and I've just read a lot of different opinions on this, that you cannot allow players to have this kind of power in a situation like they feel like they're owed something.
Well, first of all, going back to Michael's point, if we end up with a situation where Anthony Cunningham stays on as manager, and I just think it'll be very difficult for Galway Hurling to build on the progress that was made this summer. As I said earlier, we've seen it with Gerald McCarthy and Justin McCarthy, where they toughed it out with the backing of the local GAA officials, but some of the players didn't want to play for them. And both counties had very troubled experiences on the playing fields. You know, Anthony Cunningham can be very stubborn. The board officials can be very stubborn. And player power in the GAA is still, you know, it's a topic which rubs people, a lot of people, up the wrong way. And there's no doubt that club delegates and the feeling around the county this evening is that, you know, the players themselves have to look in the mirror first before we talk about changing a manager. And there wouldn't be widespread support for the players' stance as I'm speaking to you from Galway this evening. But the bottom line is that they have, you know, they've bitten the bullet. And Galway players have been accused, successive Galway hurling teams have been accused over the years of lacking the bottle and lacking leadership when the pressure comes on and all the rest. And I know this is not on the field of play where it most counts. But they are, you know, we must bear in mind that there was almost a heave against them after the Waterford game in the National League quarterfinal. Got lucky to reach knockout stages of that competition. So obviously there was issues in the camp. And what I'm hearing on the ground is that, you know, the players weren't happy with Cunningham's man management style. They felt he was too dictatorial this year, a bit more abrasive. There was communications issues. There was difficulties with match day strategies and the level, the quality of coaching as well. So I think there's a bit more to it than meets the eye. And my good instinct is that the Galway players would not have made this move unless they felt it was in the best interest of their futures.
Okay, John McIntyre, Michael Dignan, thanks a million for your time, gents. We'll have to leave it there, unfortunately. We're just out. But yeah, interesting stuff. We have to wait and see how this one plays out. There's a few texts in on it, which I just want to get to if we can before we move on to the rugby. Why do the media always say that teams beaten by Kilkenny collapsed in the second half? Could it not be they're beaten by a better team, says Mike. Players need to man up and take responsibility. It's not the manager's fault the whole time. They think they are better than they are. Total underachievers, says Tom. And Justin says, tell Dignan that players played their hearts out. Winning medals doesn't make him, i.e. Anthony Cunningham, a good coach. He still changes the team for no reason, losing games. They committed five nights a week for someone who is not a leader. Plenty more on that as well, which I'll get to in just a second. In fact, here we go. It was obvious that Anthony lost the dressing room. He has no clue of any tactics, and players played despite him. Most people in Galway are aware of this, so no surprise. I can't believe John McIntyre claims it was a shock. 51552 is our text number, and we will take a quick break. We're back with the rugby after these. Lads, 7, 4 Irish, 3 South Africans of us just got back from 2 nights in Newcastle for the Scotland versus Springboks game and 1 night in London for the Ireland versus Italy game. Best weekend of our lives, but paying for it now in more ways than one, I'd say. Our atmosphere in St James's Park was outstanding. I was surprised by the Scotland support. There were 6 South Africans for every Scot and they're only across the border. The Olympic Stadium is immense. It's just a pity about Ireland's unforced errors. Highlight of the weekend was 10,000 people in the Newcastle fan zone watching England versus Australia, says Phil in Cove. Phil, sounds like a brilliant weekend. And the difference between an English rugby player and an English swimmer today is that at least an English swimmer can get out of a pool, says another. And Brian Foley in Rexford says, Ireland had an off day, that's all. We'll take what is thrown at us, and France is just a small obstacle to overcome, and it will be shown in the first 15 minutes of the game. My prediction is Ireland to win by at least 28 points. Laugh all you want, no injuries, etc, etc. They have what it takes. You laughed at some of my predictions before. Yes, Foley's relatives played for Leinster, says Brian Foley in Wexford, who I wonder if he's a relative. Yeah.
There's optimism and then there's Brian Foley.
28 points, I like it. Okay, Donal Lennon and Shane Horgan are on the line after Ireland's win against Italy yesterday. You're both very welcome, lads, and thanks for being with us. We'll start with the positive, Shane, because Ireland did get the win. They're still unbeaten in the pool and they have the chance to top the group against France this weekend. So glass is very much half full.
Yeah, it is. And we'd be having a different conversation if they had a loss to the Italian team, who played, I think, probably to their capacity. And you do have to credit them. They slowed Ireland ball down very well, made it difficult for Ireland to gain momentum and get any tempo into the game. I thought Ireland struggled with that respect. The other thing that Italy did was they put an extra man in the defensive line, and when you are good at ruck time, they're very physical, and they slowed that ball down and had an extra man in the line, and that means there wasn't a whole lot of space to move the ball. They increased their line speed really well, and in fairness, because of Ireland's lack of accuracy at the breakdown, it made things a little bit easier for Italy. And I think we saw also a lot of anxiety from the Irish team, and they started off, you know, quite positive, quite confident. But you know, I think they felt as long as Italy was in the game, they were making errors. They couldn't get that bit of momentum going, and then some anxiety did slip in, and that coupled with probably some poor execution of skills and kicking made Ireland have a much more difficult time than we thought they would. But as you said, no bones broken, we've no injuries, and we're going into the next game against France, you know, with the opportunity to top the group.
Donal, just on the anxiety point that Shane mentioned there, I remember reading a lot of previews in the build-up to the match last week, and I can't recall a single piece which said that Ireland might struggle against Italy. I mean, most of the coverage suggested we were going to win pretty comfortably. Do you think that overconfidence might have fed through to the players, and that's what happened yesterday?
Well, I think listening to some of the players after the match, that seemed to be a factor, no doubt about it. I mean, you would have thought, given the level of preparations that goes into the international game now, that it wouldn't be a factor. But, you know, I think, you know, as I've mentioned to you in the last 2 or 3 weeks, Ireland have been in a little bubble of their own outside of the mainstream of the World Cup, if you like. And, you know, they then come in from this quiet oblivion of 6 days into a cauldron like the Olympic Stadium was the last day. And for whatever reason, they just never got out of the blocks. Italy, I mean, the point you're making, nobody gave them a chance beforehand, and that to me was for good reason. I mean, you know, you saw them against Canada the previous week. They are a very limited side. Now, no question, Parise was always going to add something to the mix, but I think you got a measure of just how good a player he is. You know, having been in hospital for 2 weeks, having not trained for 3 weeks, only arrived into the Italian squad on Tuesday, yet the impact that he has on that group of players is just incredible. So from that point of view, I think Ireland, there'll be a lot of frustration, but I don't think that's a bad thing in terms of the whole World Cup and the whole build-up. You know, for months and months, everybody's been saying it'll come down to the French game, in Cardiff, and that's exactly where we are now. But at least you're going in there with the comfort of being qualified, so that you know, that comfort blanket is there for you. Like, this is, you can really give it everything you have, you know. But the rewards, as we know, you avoid New Zealand, but again, I think we saw enough from Argentina over the weekend to suggest that if we play like we did last weekend, then we won't get beyond the quarterfinal.
The other side of the coin, Shane, is that Ireland really didn't play that well, that we beat Romania and Canada pretty comfortably, but we're very much expected to do so. And actually, if you look at the last 3 test matches against tier one opposition, if you like, Wales, England, and now Italy, Ireland have been pretty poor.
Well, I think it's very hard to discuss the pre-match, the pre-World Cup warm-ups in the same light as the World Cup, because they're very, very different. And they were certainly holding some of their gameplay back. I don't think that they were holding anything back against the Italians, because we do know that it was it was key to them getting out of the group. But I don't think you're really comparing like with like. You would be concerned about a couple of areas, that when Ireland don't play well, it's generally for the same reasons. They're not able to get tempo into the game. They're not able to get a momentum. And it's a general lack of accuracy around, you know, some of the basic skills. And I think that's probably a little concern, and what the reason behind that was. I think they probably didn't quite show as much ambition. And if that's just something just in the back of their minds going, we just need to get over this game, as Donal mentioned there, there's a stress to getting out of your pool. And, you know, we all did think, you know, we all saying, and everybody's talking, it's you know, this is just a little bump in the road. We get over Italy and the real match is France. And everybody's been talking about that. And that's been the narrative for a long time. But also, there is a stress somewhere in the back of the Irish players' minds going, well, we still have to win this game. And they also know that the way they could beat Italy is not by having to, you know, throw everything at it with regard to, you know, taking that little bit of risk when it came to, you know, the more elaborate move or pushing the pass. And I think because Ireland didn't do that, that gave Italy a sniff. And I do think Parisi made a difference, but I think not just his own personal performance, but he did raise the whole level of the Italian team. It's a different prospect going into the French game, but I think one of the lessons that they will have learned from the Italian game, but also I think from the two games against weaker opposition, that we're very good when we show ambition and we really go after teams. But we do need to be very accurate at the breakdown. When we are back accurate at the breakdown, the ball can be recycled quickly. Joe Schmidt touched on it. He said maybe our ball presentation wasn't good enough. I think maybe Connor was a little bit ponderous at getting the ball into Johnny Sexton's hands. So I think we're quite aware of, or, you know, Ireland are quite aware of what they needed to do. The reasons that they didn't do it against Italy, you know, is, you know, we've touched on some of them there, but it is still quite puzzling.
It is a bit puzzling, Donal. And you know, you look at France and you say that everything that Italy had to offer yesterday, France can give you two or three times more. So I suppose if you're Joe Schmidt, you'd be a little bit concerned that Ireland weren't able to put the game plan that they wanted yesterday against the Italians. And, you know, they do have 7 days now to get it right and get those errors out of the system. And hopefully they can do that.
Yeah, I think they can. I mean, I have no doubt for a start. By virtue of the fact that it's France, the whole intensity levels will increase. The physicality and their line speed and defence will increase automatically, because they know you just can't afford to offer the French the type of space that Italy were offered on yesterday. The other factor for me, and I don't think it has helped Ireland's attacking play, is yesterday was the seventh test that we've played since the start of the warm-ups in the 8th of August or whatever it was, and it was the seventh different centre partnership in a row. So, you know, there is a lack of consistency there. Players still trying to get used to each other. Even the first-choice centre pairing of Jarrod Payne and Robbie Henshaw have actually played very few tests together, and I think it hasn't helped their progression as a unit that one or the other has been injured for a number of games since the start of August. The other factor I think that surprised me, and I'd be interested in Shane's view on this, the halfbacks almost played like the French model, where Conor Murray took all the responsibility for the tactical kicking. I think Johnny Sexton, if you were to go back, he had the ball in his hand on very few occasions, and as a result of that, it's very difficult to influence the outcome of the game. And I think even his frustration, you could see it at the end. All he wanted to do was get over the line. You know, Ireland in an attacking position, he just kicked the ball out, and, you know, it was almost, let's take everybody out of our misery and move on.
Shane, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point. I know that the exit strategy for Ireland from the defensive zone is almost 100% reliant on the box kick of Conor Murray. And I think that's correct. I think to move out of that deep red zone where things are dangerous, you don't want to pass the ball back 10 metres to try and move it forward 20 metres. It's a difficult thing to do when you can have the nine who's right at the base of the ruck kicking. And in fairness to Conor Murray, he's, you know, he generally has a good kick, and it's a policy of the Irish team to kick to regather. But I think when we get out of that immediate first defensive zone, I think it's important then that Johnny Sexton is given a role. And I was surprised, actually, that, you know, he wasn't utilising the Ronan O'Gara style sort of spiral kick into the corners. Because as I said earlier on, Italy were playing an extra number in the line. So that means there was this defensive space in the backfield to hit into. And, yeah, it's not really a policy of teams very often anymore to kick and not with the expectation of not to regather in it or to put it out. But I think that's something we could have done against the Italians, because sometimes the game plan that you want to play, you can't play. And you have to play the game plan that you're forced into because of the defensive systems you see before you. And I would have liked to see those corners really push back, Italy push back into those areas, because I can understand why there was so much kicking, because there was that extra man on the line. But I didn't think we needed to see quite so much from Conor Murray. Listen, he's a good kicker. He works well for Ireland very often. But I think it was an occasion where he maybe took on a bit too much responsibility himself.
And actually, Donald, you can make the argument that every time that Johnny Sexton has had a good game, Conor Murray has risen alongside him as well, because when Sexton takes control, it allows Conor Murray to maybe have those little breaks and be under the radar as far as the opposition defence is concerned.
Yeah, I think so, because if Johnny Sexton is occupying the attention of the opposition back row, then that affords Conor Murray a little bit more space. I mean, they have the benefit now of, you know, they came together as a partnership in the last World Cup 4 years ago. So, you know, they are one of the most experienced pairings in this tournament. And, you know, I think we'll see the benefit of that yet. You know, for all kinds of reasons, I just think Ireland, they're sort of operating on 60% at the moment. Now, you're hoping, and, you know, Shane mentioned the fact things were held back in the warm-up matches, which they undoubtedly were. But, like, we're running out of time to show what we're actually working on in training. You know, there could be 13 days left in this tournament for us if we don't get things right against France. So I think it's important that, you know, that I think the players will be angry with the performance yesterday. And I think that will manifest itself in training during the week. I also think that with England out of the tournament now, a lot more focus is going to come on to Ireland. As I say, they've been operating almost in oblivion for the past 3 weeks. Now, you know, for the first time, they're really in one of the key matches of the weekend. You know, they're up there with the types like the Australia-England match on Saturday, or England-Wales the previous week. Ireland-France is one of the seismic games of the tournament, and everybody will be focused and interested to see how that goes. The French, I think, it'll be interesting to see. They've had 10 days to build up with this. With France, you never know. Is that too much for them? Or, you know, on the flip side, the sole focus on everything that they have done for the last, you know, for 10 days building up to this game is Ireland. And, you know, history has shown France have won at least one big game in every World Cup, and I wouldn't put it beyond them for that to be delivered next Sunday.
Shane, Donald mentioned England there. I mean, it was fascinating in many ways to watch what happened on Saturday night. Australia were brilliant for most of the game, but equally, I'm looking at Stuart Lancaster this week, and it's hard to have sympathy for him, Shane. What do you think?
Oh, I think on a human level you do have sympathy, because the amount of scrutiny and pressure that the guy's under, you can see it physically in his face. It's manifested itself during the game. He looked like the man who was watching his own funeral out there, and it was, you know, from on a personal level, I did feel sorry for him. But you do think that he seems to have made some fundamental errors. What he did do is steady an English ship that was in turmoil after the last World Cup. It was major off the field issues. I think he did very well in negating them, being, you know, making a team that was very much you know, England orientated, connected to the history of what it means for them to play for England. And I think he did that very well. The problem was, you know, that's not enough. That's one of the pillars that you have to get right. The next one is that you need to get your skill level right, your tactics right, and also your selection right. And unfortunately, on selection in particular, I think he really he just blinked. The big performance or the big improvement in England's performance over the last 18 months has been with George Ford coming in at 10 and Burrell at 13, and we've seen the performance, or sorry, Joseph at 13. We've seen the performances that they've put together, the type of gameplay they've played, Watson on the wing and Brenn a fullback, making themselves a really exciting young back line. And he just moved away from that to revert to Andy Farr,
Owen Farrell, yeah.
Owen Farrell, who seemed to, you know, sort of come from nowhere and all of a sudden be the first choice number 10. And you would have, I really think he missed a trick there. That made a, you know, he made a huge error, and also brought in Burgess at 12. There's, you know, no experience in that. And, you know, they didn't play really badly against the Welsh. They just played badly at the wrong times. And they also had a captain who has a history of making poor decisions, and Lancaster had no system in place for to make sure that he didn't take the wrong decision with you know, a couple of minutes to go in the game. I think that Australia were always going to beat them, so the really key game was against Wales, and they fluffed their lines. And after they did that, the amount of pressure that the team were under, coupled with the quality of the Australian team, you see it in their body language. That it was very unlikely that they were ever going to be able to get a result against Australians.
Yeah, last word to you on this, Donald, because, you know, obviously, you know, on a human level, as Shane said, you have to, I mean, God, you don't want to see anybody in that position. But I suppose I meant in terms of the selection policy that Lancaster has put in the World Cup. I mean, you know, at Twickenham, at the end of the Six Nations, George Ford ran a ship that scored 55 points against France, and he was dropped for the two biggest games of the World Cup. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
No, it doesn't. I think he lost his nerve at the wrong time. I mean, I've met Stuart Lancaster. He's a really decent guy. I agree with Shane. He did a magnificent job in lifting England from where they were after the last World Cup. But I think he allowed himself to be overly influenced by Andy Farrell. Like the Burgess thing, I think, has created issues within the England squad. How do you rationalise that Luther Burrell played in all the Six Nations games over the last two seasons, and then he doesn't make a 31-man World Cup squad?
Yeah,
it just seems bizarre. They had a back three that you mentioned that game, the England France game on this super Saturday, whatever it was, when we won the Six Nations last March. You had a back three there of Brown, May, who's been electric, and Anthony Watson. But then you had two centres who can't pass the ball.
Yeah,
I mean, there was just no joined up thinking in terms of their selection, and that cost England again. As Shane said, the Wales game was the key match. At half time in that game, I spoke to several people around us, and none of us could see a way back for Wales. Yes, England, I suppose, reflected their coach on the field. They also lost their nerve, and Wales, to their credit, despite horrific injuries even during that game, found a way back. Now, the other side of it, Australia, I mean, to sit in the stand and to, you know, we're up high in the second or third tier, to watch the movement of their back line, to see the quality of their passing, the confidence they have. They spread their backs around the field. They have a confidence to deliver 15, 20-metre passes. That puts more pressure on the opposition defence. And it's just their execution under pressure. I mean, they offload from Kepu, a prop forward, the build-up to Foley's second try. Was just, you know, we don't deliver that type of thing. And I saw a comment from Graham Henry today where he said, look, England tried to play like New Zealand, but they don't have the skill set to achieve that. And I think he's right.
Yeah. Okay, listen, we'll leave it there. Great stuff as always, lads. Donald and Shane, thanks a million. Appreciate it. That's rugby. The lads will be back on with us next Monday. Text to get to before we get to Eamon Dunphy. Okay, lads, will we ever have a better chance of winning the World Cup? There is no standout team. Oh, I disagree with that. I think Australia are the standout team. And there is no better team than us grinding out results. Really? Plus, England's exit means all their tickets will finish up in Irish hands. It'll be like home advantage from here on in. Any reason we can't win. if we play like we did yesterday, we haven't a snowball's chance in hell of winning the World Cup. All this crap started, this is about the hurling, when Donal Logue and his crew in Cork strike this, strike that. I agree with Michael Deignan. The players must look in the mirror at themselves. Cork hurling is still suffering, says a concerned hurling fan. Lads, there's a Rugby World Cup on. Premier League and international football, you've spent 25 minutes in GAA. Come on, they've had their coverage during the summer. Well, I think it's a pretty big story, to be honest with you, what's going on in Galway hurling. But yeah, we have just had rugby and we are going to talk football now. What a cop-out by the players of Mayo and Galway. You'd think they were world beaters by their actions. If they don't want to play under particular managers, just get off the stage and let those players that have pride in the jersey get a chance. Shame on them all. Comes in a very strong text on 51552. Eamon Dunphy, you're very welcome.
Hiya, Hugh.
What's going on in the Premier League? It's like something out of EastEnders at the moment, I think.
Well, it's always been a soap opera. There's no stars at the moment. All the big clubs. There isn't a decent team in it, a top team that would deserve to win a championship, a title.
Hmm.
And that's not just an opinion. If you look at the results in Europe, it's reflected when they play sides in Europe. And people are talking about Arsenal winning the championship. You know, they've 0 points after two games in Europe against two of the weakest opponents, Olympiacos of Greece at home last week. So Manchester United, I think, were totally exposed yesterday. And they are a million miles away from being champions. But Chelsea imploded. There's no way back for Chelsea, in my opinion, or for Mourinho, to anything like, you know, contending for a championship.
Mm.
It leaves Manchester City, who haven't had Vincent Kompany in the last few weeks, were 1-0 down at halftime to Newcastle at home at the weekend, but some magic from Aguero and David Silva saw them through. So Manchester City just go out and buy players to solve problems. They spent a fortune, absolutely obscene amount of money, to get a not very good team in European terms. They lost at home in their first Champions League match to Juventus, who at the time had 1 point from their first three or four Serie A games. So
Myself and Alan were talking about this on Friday night, Eamon, and we were just making the point that actually the product that is the Premier League now is pretty awful. And I think I watched the Merseyside Derby yesterday and I said,
yeah,
I mean, like, it just, for a Merseyside Derby, you know,
terrible.
It was so flat and so awful. And then Manchester United getting torn apart, they looked like a bunch of kids against Arsenal. And I'm just saying to myself, who really wants to watch this?
Well, I'm getting increasingly, I mean, and I love soccer, but I'm getting increasingly sour in my attitude towards the Premier League. It's because of the bad behaviour of people like Mourinho, not just Mourinho. Ferguson was shocking, as an example, when he was manager of Manchester United. The bad behaviour of players on the pitch, the cheating. The one thing that stands out every match, the Chelsea match, good example, the week, Southampton should have had two penalties in the first half, unquestioned. And they didn't get them. Now, every time you watch a soccer match, you see a vital incident, and it's a match, a game changer. They won't use video evidence. Every other sport in the world, but because this man Platini and the Premier League won't, you know, allow it to happen, it can't happen. It's a badly run sport. A lot of the people in it are spivs. I mean, at the very highest level, are spivs.
Mm.
A lot of the guys who are going into management now, and it's something you have to... You can write a thesis about the decline of it, but you and Alan might consider this. In those TV studios, you've got the likes of Jamie Carragher, Gary Neville. In another era, they would have been managers. They're not going into it.
The
guys are finishing now with so much money in the bank, they think, why do I need a headbanger from Kazakhstan or somewhere with a big tank annoying me? And, well, that's what I'm looking for. Old Steve Bruce, a whole type of man who wants to change the name of the club.
Yeah, Alan.
It just made a few quid, you know, on the stock exchange.
Alan,
Big brains. Alan Hansen is another example.
Yeah,
lots of big players. They never went near soccer when they finished playing.
Yeah, that was two penalties that Eamon just mentioned there, Alan. Mm. Right? I mean, I was watching this. Southampton should have had two penalties. And then you have a situation where the losing manager goes on a 7-minute rant about the fact that referees are against him, when it was his side that were actually got away with murder. And I'm thinking, his own players are listening to this. They're listening to Jose Mourinho and they're buying into what he's saying.
Yeah, but it's not the first time we've seen this with Mourinho, Hugh. You know my feelings on him. He has no class whatsoever. He never had, win or lose, no matter what club he's been at. He comes to clubs, spends a year or two with ready assembled teams, or spends a fortune to get two or three players in, wins a league and is gone again. There's no sustainability in what he tries to do or what he tries to achieve. And then you see the carry on of him, as you said. It was fascinating to watch, because he builds up this persona as if he's infallible and unbreakable and plays these mind games, and it almost becomes personal, the psychological attacks. Then he has like the one we've seen on Wenger, who's a classy manager. Then you see him crumble, literally crumble on television on Saturday night, almost pleading for his job. And in some instances, you might have some sympathy for a person like that. I don't think anyone's any sympathy for the likes of Mourinho and the carry on that we've seen out of him for the last how long. And to see him, as you say in the interview, it was unbelievable to watch. As you say, one question was asked and he went off on a rant for 7.5-8 minutes. It was
Aaron, just to make the point that I think he was trying to make, when he was asked about the two penalties, he stopped the interview and walked away.
Well, he tries this deflection tactic, Eamon, yeah, always, and it was obviously, the performance was horrendous, Hugh. He's under serious pressure. They've just lost the game to Southampton, and as I said, it was really poor performance. But he comes out and the first thing he thinks of is to go on the attack against the referee, which was totally wrong. Like the incident, as you said, they had two clear penalties. Anybody can see that, but people are sick and tired of it now. And the crucial thing amongst all this, the players themselves, I think, are sick and tired of him, Hugh, and that's why all the problems are basically coming to a fore now.
Well, Eamon, something struck me, right? And I'm looking at a guy like Brendan Rodgers, who seems like a very decent individual. It seems like a genuine guy, albeit maybe some people will argue he's out of his depth. But I look at someone like Jose Mourinho, who doesn't seem to have a care in the world about who he upsets or who he walks over. And Brendan Rodgers, who isn't like that, and he ends up losing his job. And Mourinho, you know, is in a highly paid contract, you know, and all the success behind him. I'm wondering, what do you actually have to be in order to succeed in this world? You know?
I think good question. I think you have to be foreign for a start. I mean, a lot of top managers are no English managers now. All those top four clubs are managed by foreigners. I mean, an equally ridiculous character, but not in any way to in the Mourinho. He's down, as Alan says, in the gutter. But Van Gaal is another. I mean, if you see him after the match, you see his interviews. Yeah. These guys are like guys out of a soap opera. They're not going for the best, you know. Mm. The people who run these clubs, you'd have to take it on a case-by-case basis. But to generalise, you could say the culture is rotten. Of cheating on the pitch is now endemic. And you can't have that. Look at rugby. You know, it's impeccable. Every decision we know is the right decision because they have the TMO. Now, off the pitch, the spivvery, look at FIFA.
Yeah.
Look at UEFA.
Yeah.
Platini, 1.8 million Swiss francs, which is $2 million. He's under investigation. And if you really knew, if we weren't on the radio, I could tell you stories about the English Premier League and thieving that would make your hair stand on end. And all the time, the ticket prices are going up.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's going up,
players' wages,
exponentially, is the television money.
Mm.
So you'd use the television money to lower ticket prices, to allow people into games. No, West Brom increased their ticket prices this year. West Brom.
Yeah. You look at the German model, Hugh. Last week, Borussia Mönchengladbach, unbelievable stadiums. They're charging a tenner in. Places are packed, and people actually appreciate the wages are nowhere near as colossal as what they are in the Premiership. And there's a connection there amongst the fans, the supporters, and the people on the pitch. There's a total disconnect in what's going on with the people in the crowd and the Premier fellas on the pitch.
Well, Eamon, I'm off to the boxing on Thursday for a week to go over and actually look at some honest, hard-working lads who do it all for nothing. And I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks to get back to Doha for the World Boxing Championships on Thursday in Qatar.
Wow, you get some gigs, Hugh.
I tell you what, there's a seat in the plane for you if you want to come.
Is that what they call it?
Yeah.
I'm here on a sunbed.
Listen, mind yourself, Eamon. Thanks a million.
Okay, have a good trip.
Cheers. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. Okay, listen, we're back tomorrow night with Gary. Thanks, Alan.
Pleasure.
Thanks to John and to Emma as well, and to Adrian who set up the show. Okay, Louise on the way.